This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of the show. We're Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Get ready because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Proactionary. Proactionary? Is that a word?
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 116 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we look back on all the information and revelations that we were given over the course of Series 8 and say, yes, that was awesome. We finally learned this and this, but wait, what about this and this other thing? And they never told us about, well, you get the idea. Here in the GPR studios today, spinning plates with question marks on them, to my left is Jay. Jay, how are you this evening, sir?
Careful. I'm trying to I'm okay. Just
yeah, no, we'll get this answered. Don't worry. We'll clean it all up in post. And, over here to my right now with the gift of speech is Haley. Haley, how are you this evening?
I am barely plague-ridden at all.
Wow.
That's good. Yeah.
That's apparently good. That's a good thing.
Yeah. As opposed to last week, yes.
And I am always as Keir. Haley, what the hell are we doing this week?
Well, we're going to ignore all of the fascinating and at times mind-bending answers we were given and all the storylines that were definitely wrapped up and instead decide to harp on and on about all the incompletes, you know, as we're wont to do. We take a look at the plot holes, the dangling plot threads, and the outright avoided topics and begin to question just how much information did we really get?
What's Gallifreyan for bupkis?
Yeah, so
we want answers.
I mean, that
you're not going to get them in this showrunner.
This is something that we've run into a lot with Stephen Moffat. Is it's like, you know, we get the one or two answers, and then it's like, oh yeah, but you forgot to answer these three, and you gave us six more. So what's going on now?
Don't worry, he'll answer the questions that nobody asked.
Exactly.
You didn't even know how clever I was being until I showed you how clever I was. But I mean, let's just make sure that we put this out there. We are not in any way going to turn this into any sort of bash session. That is not what this is about at all. No. Because we still stand firmly behind the fact that this was one of the most focused and well-structured seasons we've had in quite some time. But you know, one of the things that we really enjoy as true fans is chatting and hypothesizing and asking and wanting to know more. You know, we may be completionists, or we may just be, you know, obsessive compulsive or whatever the case may be, but we've always got things we still want to know. And
right. So this week it's top 10 unanswered questions from Series 8.
Oh, top 10. Yes, guys, let's do a top 10. You know, let's make it 11. Just because that odd
it goes all the way up to 11.
Yeah,
see what you did there. Odd numbers. I want to know what happened to the ducks. Where are the ducks? That's what I want to know.
That's all.
Hell, it's been, three seasons so far? I think we deserve an answer on the ducks, Moffat.
That's all Series 9 is going to be about, is the ducks.
The ducks missing from the pond in upper level.
You're going to find them all in a staring contest with what's left of the angels, glaring at each other. You guys do realize that ducks don't have eyelids. Damn it.
Son of a...
All right, so some of the major plot holes, or not holes, but the elements that we're looking for. So, and I mean, we've talked about this one before, but what about Gallifrey?
Gallifrey?
Are we going to find Gallifrey? Is there more to this story than we've gotten so far?
Yes.
Or do we necessarily need it? You know, we've also talked about, you know, the risk of bringing the Time Lords back as immediately accessible characters, but as a plot point. You know, do you really want that back in the show's dynamic? So,
yeah.
This is an absolute coin toss right now. We really haven't been given a whole lot of, not even little hints of clues as to, you know, other than the fact, just the obvious reveal that the coordinates that the doctor were given were false, and the hunt goes on. But as far as the likelihood of them returning Gallifrey to the universe in which we as the viewers are occupying, we really haven't gotten anything one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the closest that we got was just finding out that, nope, Missy lied. It's not there. So, okay, that's one spot down.
How many more places could there be?
Move on to spot two.
So, this is one of those things that, we've said before. If it's handled carefully, then it could be a tremendous thing. So it's just one of those things. Do they bring it back as, hey, it's a place in the universe again. You can go there whenever you want for, whatever plot needs Gallifrey to be there, it's there. Or is it going to be a much more nebulous thing of, oh, well, you can find it under the right circumstances if you hold your tongue at the right angle, and so
you got to get the kid up on the roof to hold the antenna and
wrap him in tin foil.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Have you been coming across I'm not even going to say a notable amount, but just any Reddit postings or blog entries or anything where people are saying, we need this. We have to have this back. I want this answered.
No, and that's the thing is, I haven't, everyone's curious about it, but I haven't heard anyone say that it's, they require it to be complete with the show.
Mm. Right. I think everyone's curious as to what would be done with it if it were back, but nobody knows really what should be done with it or if it should be back.
Mm. It is a risky proposition bringing it back. And having that hanging out there as like the carrot on the stick is something that could make a nice motivation point for the series to come. But whether or not it actually comes to fruition, that's kind of secondary.
Yeah, that's true.
But it seems to be the primary is a little bit more, selfish as far as we humans go. And that's what's going to happen with our companion.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some speculation and some rumors that are come from dubious sources and stuff. But at this point, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's no, it could go either way. Like you said with Gallifrey, it's a coin toss. Mm. I can see it going either direction.
Right. Well, think about this though. Think about let's just take the hypotheticals there. So we'll take side A of the coin, where the Christmas episode actually does prove to be her last. And she walks off with this. So you are going to be going into the top of the next series with an unknown as far as the next companion, or if there will be a companion for a while, or if he's just going to freewheel it, which could be beneficial if the hunt begins, and this is something he's got to do on his own for a bit.
Right.
Or start, turning over some stones that that require speaking to some nefarious characters or whoever that it's just he'd spend more time protecting a companion than he would requiring one. So that's kind of side one. But there's downfalls to that, obviously, because it doesn't really give you any sort of proper closure after everything. Sort of these false starts on her exits before. I don't know. And then side B is, some circumstances come about that say that, okay, well, we're gonna extend the run. She's gonna be with us for another X number of episodes, or call it half the season, maybe. And you run the risk of doing something like we had with the Ponds, where the season felt totally split in half.
Yeah, it felt like a false start, and then you just didn't have enough time left to go anywhere with it.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm worried about. If it were to go in that direction, that it's just not going to feel right. I don't think that it's going to be enough time to really resolve Clara's storyline in a ideal fashion. But at the same time, it's how much time are we going to have with the next companion to really get used to him? Are we going to have those first 8 episodes or however many to say, well, I don't know how I feel about this companion because, none of it made sense yet.
Right. I would rather see her go at the end of the Christmas episode, wrap things up nicely, or to see her for another series.
Yeah. A full series, you mean?
Full series, yes.
Okay. Well, this I'm going to throw this in. This is one of those little sort of hanging threads, but I figured this is a good point as any to throw this in. If we are nearing the close of the Clara dynasty, whether it be in this upcoming Christmas episode or whether it gives us, 4, 6, 8 episodes to come in order to allow her to close her story, what's the likelihood that we may have already met who the next companion is? you know, they gave us this funny little pump fake start in Into the Dalek, where we got a chance to see Oswald well before we thought we were going to, so that it wasn't a total surprise. In fact, it was, you know, it was actually a pretty well executed confusion factor for the audience, you know, keeping them on their toes. Mm-hmm. And if Moffat and company got a taste for that, that might be something they'd like to say, ah, you remember so-and-so who you thought was just sort of off in the wings there? Well, you kind of, you know, Doctor took a shine to them and brought them back.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Who do you feel from Series 8 could be that companion?
Orson Pink.
That would be kind of interesting. But, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, there was the soldier girl on...
Journey Blue.
Journey Blue.
Yes, Journey Blue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
the engineer.
The engineer. What was her name? Saber? No, that's not right. Sabra.
Yeah.
Although I don't really know. Sabra didn't really have any sort of a connection that I thought really struck me as, you know, there was a camaraderie or a click between the two of them that could benefit one another.
Right.
Her ability is gone now, too.
Yeah. I feel like the other two characters we mentioned kind of did have a connection with the Doctor, but I feel like they closed it down pretty hard that these people wouldn't be coming back.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, the same kind of thing with Sabra was her story was complete at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there wasn't really anything left to tell with her, which at the same time, I'm really sick of the, you know, oh, this person is the companion of the Doctor because they have this amazing quality to them or this amazing thing surrounding their whole life. And why can't we just have somebody that he bumps into and hits it off with?
Right.
You know, I mean,
just someone that he gets saddled with, like a Joe Grant.
Yeah.
I'm your new assistant. Oh, crap.
Or a Tegan, you know.
Yeah. She wouldn't leave.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I would not mind getting someone like that where it's just, you know, there's nothing special about them. There's nothing, like, inherently amazing. It's just, no, this is a person that, you know, through the travels with the Doctor and things like that, become an amazing person.
Right. Because of the Doctor's intervention or interaction with the Doctor brings out the amazingosity within them.
Exactly.
Amazingitude. Well, okay. No, all right. I can fly with that. So, wait, there is a third side of the coin. Did the Doctor just fly solo for a while?
Not for very long.
This Doctor.
I was going to say, that of all
we thought the others went off the rails when they traveled by themselves too long.
Of all of the Doctors that we've had recently, this is the one I could see traveling by himself for a while and not necessarily going off the deep end, because let's face it, he's already there. But
short trip.
I think that he could be the Doctor to travel by himself for a little while, but at the same time, you know, as amazing an actor as Capaldi is, and I think that he could carry the show just himself, he needs someone to bounce stuff off of. And let's face it, Companion of the Week gets tiring really quick.
Well, not to mention the fact that because of his persona, Companion of the Week would spend more than half the episode just trying to understand that he's not completely berating them. That's just the way he is.
Yeah.
So in order to accomplish anything, you have to kind of get to a point where, all right, I see where you're coming from.
You know,
but what if he did a few adventures with the Paternoster Gang or something like that?
Mm-hmm. That's valid.
That could be interesting. Although, I mean, there's still a large contingent of Whovians that absolutely despise the Paternoster Gang.
But I love them, so I don't care what other people think.
I didn't say those people were right. Quite the opposite, but you know.
Everyone is entitled to the right to be wrong.
Everyone is entitled to my opinion. So.
Exactly.
But, you know, if you think about it, Tom Baker was the only Doctor that we saw traveling by himself for any extended length of time. I mean, they all had like their episode or two, but Tom Baker was the only one that went for a little while without a companion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of indicative of, like, you really need a fantastic personality playing the Doctor to be able to pull that kind of thing off.
Well, it has to be a sort of a Baker like that immediately affable.
Yeah.
Persona, you know, the one that's just, you know, he'll just kind of charm and grin and joke his way into being accepted by, you know, whichever timeline or period in history or social class that he suddenly dropped himself into, because, you know, make enough wisecracks and offer enough candy and things, you could probably get away with that for a bit. But if you come in as the battle ready Scotsman,
with the attack eyebrows.
Precisely. Locked position.
Yeah. So it's a tougher draw.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think they're going to have to put somebody there when the time comes.
Yeah.
But I honestly don't think it's going to be someone we've already met.
Yeah.
I think we will get, it'll be sort of a 2-episode process. You know, I think he will have to travel alone for an episode or two, as many times this proves to be the case. And he stumbles across the next relationship.
Right. Yeah. I actually think, you know, he might hang out with the Paternoster gang again for the first episode, and then the second episode go somewhere to find a companion.
Hmm. That could be doable. I mean, that way you have the lone doctor for a little bit without having him be the only person.
Right.
So that could work. I approve this plan.
Make it so.
So let's take a look at some of the things that aren't so integral to the plot, but still stand out remarkably. The first one being, how the heck did Missy escape the time lock?
Okay. Escape or
was let out.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did she get away from the time lock?
I don't think she's the only thing that got through.
No.
Yeah.
We've had a few escapees.
Yep.
You know, you had that small Dalek contingency. So I think this was a release. It was not an escape, but I think it was a release under the wrong intent. I'm curious to know when it happened too. Yeah. As far as, you know, counter to the doctor's timeline, you know, if he spent his time in the town called Christmas, was it going on then? How long has she been recruiting, you know, consciousnesses?
Do you think that maybe her getting let out was their first attempt at making contact with him? And then when she went off, they were like, oh, well, let's use this crack over here.
I think if that were the case, he would have been brought in on the game. You know, I think they're when the Time Lords screw up that royally, or when the CIA faction of the Time Lords screw up to that extent in any of the extended content, they fess up to it. They never apologize, but they admit what they did.
Right.
And in this time around, it was not because of the Master's threat that they reached forward through the crack and lent the assist that they did. So.
Well, isn't it entirely possible that she just found a different crack that they didn't find and escaped that way?
Ooh, multiple cracks?
Yeah. I mean, there were a bunch of them around.
No, it was the same one. It would just go to different places.
Oh, right. The crack in her wall just kept moving.
Exactly. Because that's what cracks do, right?
It was a load-bearing wall.
It was a load-bearing crack.
Well, but this goes along with the fact that, and this was one of my sort of, you know, hanging back there questions, was how did she get the Matrix slice? That was obviously that she was utilizing as the nether sphere. I mean, that's a lot of tech that even the doctor was surprised that it was in use. He was fascinated by it until it, you know, obviously the penny dropped and he realized what was going on. Mm-hmm. Then he understood, you know, how it might have come into her possession or why someone would have it, but not necessarily how she acquired it. If this was some sort of a strange plan on behalf of the Time Lords to get every, you know, to release the time lock or whatever that case may be, then maybe they, you know, they've used the Master before. Maybe this was another one of their attempts, and, you know, all things going awry as they do.
See, I kind of like the idea of them saying, okay, well, we don't know how to get, so we're going to release you and, you know, you go find him. Cause, you know, let's face it. Anytime the Master's out, the two of them always wind up coming into contact with each other sooner or later. So, I mean, you release the Master, you know that the doctor's going to come around. So I just like the idea of saying, well, that's what they did. And then they were like, well, this isn't working. So we've got, you know, we've got four words or, you know, two words that we can send through this crack. What are we going to do?
Mm. Well, it's the, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle again thing. I think that's kind of just my gut. My gut is that they, you know, at a point of desperation, they chose to use the most insane solution, you know, exhausting all other possibilities. You throw this Hail Mary, mm-hmm. and while it worked, they got something out. What they released was not what they should have. I can see that. Because then they've got to sit there and eat crow for at least half an episode of him just going, you know, Doctor just going all Malcolm Tucker on them for their stupidity. Because who else is going to scream at governmental figures? You know? I can't wait for that script. It's going to be brilliant. It'll be a cracker.
Oh, that would be absolutely hilarious.
Just prepare the bleep button for Doctor Who. This one will air very late in the evening.
Just 4 solid minutes of beep. Yeah, yeah.
Just for tonight, BBC Three will be carrying Doctor Who, while BBC One shows you puppies and flowers.
Were they sending Morse code through during the episode? No, that was just the editing.
So what are some of the other questions that we've got going on here?
Well, it goes along with the mistress is obviously, well, correct me if I'm wrong. It was the Briggs shot, but she was uploaded, you know, right. Red laser means this, blue laser means this, right. Uploaded back to the Nethersphere, which means if I'm understanding how this worked for any of the other premise within the episodes, that the physical form is gone. So if there's no body anymore, and they plan on using Gomez as the mistress from this point on, if she ends up returning out, you know, coming back out of the Nethersphere again into physical form, how does she look the same?
See, that's the
thing. Missy.
Damn it.
That's the thing that I keep going back to is you know that she's not going to make this whole army of Cybermen that can then be turned around and used as a weapon on her. So she has it built in there that if any of the Cybermen for some reason wind up taking a shot at her, it fires a teleporter instead.
Okay.
I buy that. Or that she had some sort of failsafe in place to bring her back.
Yeah. I mean, but see, this is one of those questions that I'm like, I don't care. Like, yeah,
as long as she comes back, it's fine.
I mean, they're going to come up with some off-the-wall thing. Like, I mean, let's be honest. My theory is probably one of the most coherent that we're going to hear.
No, it's going to be way more harebrained than that.
Yeah, so, you know, but at the same time, it's like, okay, fine. She got out, she worked, and you tried to explain it. Got it. Let's go with it.
Or, and this is the case with at least 50%, if not more, of all of these kinds of questions that we as the rabid, unwashed masses go at it, never get answers. Just move on. You know, make something explode, give somebody a good speech, somebody kisses somebody, just move on. And just never address it.
Right.
Because if that were the case, we'd still be asking, you know, where are Amy's parents and blah, 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 blah. Just no, it's just not going to happen.
What is Brian doing right now? I want to know.
Brian's log, day 2,766.
Still haven't seen
nothing's happening.
He's the companion all next season. It's him and Wilfred and the doctor.
I bought more yogurt. End of log.
You know, I actually got into a conversation the other day with somebody, and they were like, "No, I want to see Wilf come back. I want, you know, Wilf." And I'm like, "You know," and they were like, "No, he was in the war, so you can have the doctor go back to the World War II, and he can run into young Wilf and this, that, and the other." And I'm like, "Okay, first off, the reason that why Wilf was such an amazing character was Bernard Cribbins. Let's be honest.
Yes.
So yes, you can get younger Wilf, but it's not going to be the same. You're not going to care."
And not in the slightest.
And two, the other reason why Wilf worked was because Bernard Cribbins was next to David Tennant. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if you put Wilf next to Matt Smith, it's not going to be the same dynamic. I'm not saying that it's going to be worse, but it's going to be a much different thing. And now picture Bernard Cribbins next to Peter Capaldi.
A young Bernard Cribbins impersonator next to Peter Capaldi.
Yeah.
Dogs and cats living together.
So, I mean, yes, I understand the love for Wilfred. I absolutely love him myself, but you can't bring him back. That was lightning in a bottle that you're just not going to get again.
Right. Well, okay. We're going to stay on the past characters or motif. We met Orson Pink,
mm-hmm.
future human time traveler, descendant of Daniel Pink, now dead. There's only one way this can work. There's only one way this can work without cracking out some seriously crappy, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
No,
crackpot explanation.
I would argue that.
I mean, they can do the whole history can be rewritten thing, or you could say Danny had another kid before he met Claire that he never knew about or something. But I hate those explanations.
It can be, you know, a descendant of Danny's brother. You know,
okay. No, I had this conversation with Julie earlier tonight. The whole Danny has a brother thing. Mm-hmm. Would be crappy. That would be crappy, cheap, cheap writing.
Yeah, he's going to have an identical brother, and Claire's going to meet him and fall in love.
No, or it could be...
Wait a minute. That only works in DC comics.
It could be, you know, a cousin or something, you know, some other branch of the Pink family. And then, you know, obviously Clara goes to and gives them the soldier because she knows it's important to the family and whatever. And then it comes...
Wasn't Danny in an orphanage as a kid?
Yes.
Damn it, don't ruin my theories like that. Crap. All right, fine. So Clara's pregnant. Moving on.
Yeah.
that's pretty much the only way it works. Now the question becomes, when do we find out that she got knocked up?
Christmas
Not
flashback.
When did she get knocked up, but when do we find out that she's been...
Flashback!
On the bunk beds. No,
because the only time is in the TARDIS and they're...
Orson Pink is River Song.
Oh, Jesus. That's going to make for an awkward Christmas.
That explains the fro. That explains the fro. Space head.
So, I mean, it's pretty obvious. If Clara is pregnant, then the Christmas special being her out makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I seriously think that that's what she went to the cafe to tell the doctor. She was ready to tell him something, and then he brought up Gallifrey, and she just left it.
Mm. And you were still grasping at the whole... post-it note with 3 months written on it,
yeah,
and that sort of thing, which I think could have been a lot of things. Their relationship could have been 3 months in. She could have been traveling with the doctor for 3 months. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it could have been a number of things, but I seriously think that that's where they were going with it.
Hmm. Okay. Any other biggies out there as far as, you know, paradoxes of the Orson / Danny Pink variety that are still hanging on your brains?
Not that I can think of. Most everything else is just like little niggling facts that it's like really don't matter, but they still exist.
Well, the one that I wanted to just throw out there, there were two, but I'm still going to wonder about Cyberbrig, you know, floating in orbit somewhere around waiting to protect us all. Was an explanation that we were promised at the in the preseason. Mm-hmm. And that was Capaldi's decision that, you know, as always, you know, as an actor, he chooses to continue to wear his wedding ring. So they built the costume ring over it. And we were told that there was going to be some explanation in there. I'm going to piggyback. There were two things. There was a doctor's ring, mm-hmm. which we were told there was going to be an explanation. And we were told that there was specifically going to be some sort of, if not an explanation, well, no, I think they actually did. I'll have to go back and look at the actual interview. The explanation of the face, the doctor's face and the similarities to Frobisher and Caecilius. So, which only got a quick glancing check in Deep Breath when he was talking to the hobo in the street.
I think that might have been the explanation that they were just talking about, and that's all they ever planned to give us.
That's not an explanation, though. That's an acknowledgement.
Yeah, an acknowledgement of the question.
Needs to be explained.
It's like when you're taking a test and you rephrase the question as your answer. That's what they did.
Exactly, yes. Oh, I want to know the ring, because it wasn't one of those things that they're just like, well, no, it's part of his costume. It was like they flat out said, no, you're going to understand that we're going to explain what the ring means. We're going to explain why it's important. I'm like, okay, where is that then?
Right, because I was waiting for, because it's, to put the costume ring over it or around it or however it sort of nests over the thing, mm-hmm. they could have just kept it subtle. It's freaking huge. It's this gigantic clonker of a thing that practically has like the Metabilis crystal on it. I thought that would have been great if it had an actual fragment of Metabilis on it. Oh.
They could have given him a single rhinestone glove. It would have been more subtle.
Exactly. But yeah, that was something. If you're going to say, oh, you know, we'll explain it, don't worry about it. But to say we're going to explain it and it's going to make sense to you as fans, meaning that we're going to tie it in and give it something clever, because I'm Mr. Clever, I'm going to have to check the actual text, but I'm pretty sure the quote said we were going to get it this season. So clock's ticking. You got one episode to go. Unless Santa Claus says, you know, when I brought you that ring, were a young lad of 750.
Yeah.
Or maybe when Clara and the doctor are having some big heart to heart and he explains the ring to her.
I'm really hoping that it's just he says he refers to the first doctor and ties it back into that. It's like, no, I used to wear this when I was real young, when I first started traveling, and I just decided to pull it back out. It's something like that would be fine. You know, if you say, no, it's the same ring that the first doctor had, I'm fine with it at that point. Like, that is enough of an explanation for me.
Yep, it doesn't require much. Just give me what I was told I was going to get.
Exactly.
Yep. I might not like the meatloaf, but you told me we were having meatloaf tonight. I want to see it on my plate.
Yep.
All right. So I just now read this question. I don't know who put it in here, but if the curator, Tom Baker, had Osgood as an assistant before she joined UNIT, wouldn't he know her fate?
Yeah, I threw that in because I was just kind of, I was having a discussion last night at a Christmas get-together about Osgood, and some people were still very, you know, nose-bent about it. And, you know, it's all right. You know, I explained the whole, you know, the master really has to be a genuine threat, has to be something that you actually fear again. And one of the best ways to do that is to go straight for something that's gonna hurt. Oh, but that's fine. But then we got so built up because the fact that we saw the doctor towards the end of his life, you know, when he's finally the curator in his waning years, he has her, and that's on the drive home. Literally, I'm thinking about it and thinking, damn it, wait a second. Wouldn't he then have cognizance of the fact, because you know, he's talking about going back and revisiting old faces and such, which means his memory is still sharp as a tack. So why would he want to have this assistant who he knows at that point is then going to go off to bigger things up for a couple of months and then get vaporized.
But when I don't remember him having Osgood as an assistant, I remember Kate having Osgood basically as an assistant.
Wasn't she in the museum as well? She was sort of the liaison or involved in the provision of these, I don't know, call them alien artifacts. That sounds like, you know, something very different. It sounds like we're Torchwood, but that were maintained within the museum that the curator oversaw. And that's why she was wearing Fourth Doctor's scarf and all.
No, see, I thought she was like, because you see her, the first time that you see her, she's running up to Kate with her phone, you know, saying, oh, your phone's ringing. It's, you know, I thought that she was Kate's assistant, and yes, she worked with the museum, but she was Kate's assistant.
Oh,
I
didn't, okay.
I don't remember really seeing anything between her and the curator.
Yeah.
I guess I was just kind of leaping at the connection, the fact that the involvement with the museum and the scarf, that there was some connection between the two of them. They had reached some point of camaraderie or at least her emulation, either of him or what have you.
Well, it could just be that she's a big fan of the doc and decided to take this one thing and emulate him.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is, if you think about it, then, you know, if the doctor's hitting the end of his life, he's like, you know what? I really wish I'd had more time to hang out with that girl. You know what? I'm going to go back and hang out with that girl.
Well, and one can assume that at this point in the doctor's life, he's seen all of these people die, and he still chose to go back to this specific period in time.
Yeah, so it's that one, that doesn't seem as much of a problem for me. It could be. I don't know. I'm just saying.
No, that's legit. I'll take that. But one that we did have some feedback on came from, was this tweeted into us?
Yeah. So we got some Twitter responses. The at @Matthew_64 sent us a question or just said, when we asked what unanswered questions you had, he said, Missy's TARDIS. So yeah, I'm going to extrapolate on this and say, A, will she have one? And B, will it have a working chameleon circuit? Or are we going to have another iconic TARDIS around?
I have a question. How often does the master have a TARDIS?
Most of the time.
Most of the time? Okay.
The vast majority of the time. I would assume, since that is going to be the typically given mode of transport that has either, you know, been with the master or was provided in the instances where the Time Lord sent him out. Oh, so what could possibly go wrong? Was provided with the TARDIS. She will have one. It may have been in existence. We were talking about what may have been going on within a saint. Oh, God, what cathedral were we dealing with? That it may have been in there the entire time that we had not seen. Will it have a working chameleon circuit? I would imagine yes, because the master has never had an issue with it.
No, and I get that. That's just one of those things that, okay, the master in the new series has never had a TARDIS.
Correct.
So there's nothing telling everyone else that, you know, he's had a TARDIS before and it works just fine as far as the chameleon circuit goes. So it would make sense for newer viewers to say, no, this United States phone booth thing, the Bill and Ted version, is the master's TARDIS.
Some nasty AT&T booth.
This walk-up ATM, that's his thing.
With the hanging cable from where the yellow pages has been ripped off. It just has the... Yeah, traveling in style, aren't you,
Mr.? So, I mean, for newer viewers, it would make more sense if the Master's TARDIS had a distinctive look as well.
I don't. As someone who has seen mostly the new stuff, it feels like the TARDIS is the Doctor's thing, and it doesn't know. I don't know that it would feel right that the Master had one too.
Hmm. Okay, I think it would. It would feel awkward if the Master had one and it had an iconic look to it. Okay, I right. think that would be because it sort of breaks the fact that there's the charm of the fact that the Doctor's is the way it is because right. it's stuck. And even there have been instances where it could have been fixed.
And he decided not to.
Wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that actually makes sense. I hadn't thought about it from that aspect, but yeah. I'm still just curious as to what they would pick to be the Master's TARDIS.
I would think just the giant carpet handbag that finishes off the whole Mary Poppins look.
There you go.
She just step into the bag.
That would be fantastic.
It does the whole like spiral staircase thing, walks down into it.
No, she just climbs inside of her umbrella.
Or just closes it around her.
There you go. Her TARDIS has been her umbrella the whole time.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Doesn't that smack up that S.H.I.E.L.D. episode where Patton Oswalt just opens up the umbrella? Wait a second.
Don't
cross the streams.
It's already happened. Speaking of crossing streams, so what are the other little nagging questions here? It has to do with Santa Claus. As we're mixing fictional characters here.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand from the teaser or two that we've been handed that there's a bit of bent noses between the two of these major figures here. So what could possibly be the beef with jolly old Saint Nick Frost?
He's the monk.
That would be perfect. He's just screaming at him, you're a meddler. No, you're a meddler. You're a meddler.
No,
sneak into people's houses.
That would actually make the most sense is if Santa was another random Time Lord.
Just another rogue.
Yeah, just somebody that like separated themselves completely from Time Lord society. Said, you know what? I don't like anything that's going on here. I'm gone. And he left like, you know, millennia ago and just happened to find this nice little gingerbread style house on the North Pole.
Okay. No, I could totally fly with the Santa's a Time Lord theory. That works.
Because, I mean, how else are you going to bring in Santa Claus to the Doctor Who mythos and right. not have it be completely ridiculous?
It is going to be ridiculous.
He travels around the entire world in a single night, fits all those presents in his sleigh.
I can see him as, all right, now I'm going to take Time Lord off the table.
Okay.
Because we've already dealt for decades with the last of, or not decades, but we've dealt for seasons with the last of my species. So to have one there the whole time that we knew about, the Doctor knew about, and I never really count him on the list because he's nuts, or whatever the case may be. I could see a time agent.
Yeah.
A retired time agent.
Or it could be a Time Lord, and that's why the Doctor has such a beef with him. You knew what happened to Gallifrey, and you never came out to find me. I thought I was the last of my kind the whole time.
The Doctor thought he was
time.
Gone all these years. Yeah. And
he thought that he had died ages ago.
Mm-hmm. I like the time agent idea because the Doctor has a known disdain for them.
That's true.
You know, Captain Jack being the only exception, and that took a while to win him over. But in general, that whole faction is looked upon with some seriously furrowed eyebrows by the Doctor.
But what the question that I'm running at is, what would be the purpose? Like, what would be a time agent's angle for being Santa Claus?
I was retired.
Free cookies.
All right.
He's retired. He's taking on this philanthropic quest. You know, still has his vortex manipulator. You never see it under those big poopy sleeves. Or maybe that's that, you know, he's fashioned his into that gigantic belt buckle around his head.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, that's a possibility.
He's just nosy. He likes poking through other people's houses.
Exactly.
You got any good stuff in here? No, fine, I'll just take the cookies.
Just, jeez.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, though, because, I mean, that was one of the big questions going into Series 8 was, you know, is Robin Hood actually going to be Robin Hood? Is it a Renaissance fair kind of thing, or what's going on here? None of us ever really thought that it would actually be, nope, Robin Hood was a real person that existed, and we just forgot.
Mm-hmm. We're all stories in the end.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I can't wait to see how it goes.
Yeah. Anything else float out there? Oh, we had, let's see. Well, I know our friend Nick, Nick Hook, had tweeted in with us.
He tweeted us, and apparently Stephen Moffat had teased that there's a dangerous, quote-unquote, dangerous companion relationship. And he said, fingers crossed the companion is Missy, and the story is the hunt for Gallifrey.
Okay. So yet another, we're going to have to work together on this solution.
I don't see them being able to do that for very long.
Well, if you know, if someone just happens to leave halfway through the series and you've got like, you know, 6 episodes that you have to fill with a companion.
And if it totally means that you get to some point during the season where the return of Alex Kingston and you have a throwdown between Missy and River for the doctor's hand.
Oh,
my little hearts go pitter-pat.
I would love to see Alex Kingston do stuff with her British accent again.
Yes, please.
Because seeing her on Arrow is just not the same.
No. Okay, so I'm sure there's fanfic out there for that one. So
just be careful with what you
and
search.
And Kira has written amount of it.
I want family safe fanfic, but you can send up if you got any links to anybody you know who has written showdowns between River and Missy at this point. While the doctor, strangely at a loss for words over in the corner, send me links to Kira@GallifreyPublicRadio.com so I can read up on that. I will have a good larf.
That would be hilarious. Oh, all right. So that's about all the questions that we've been able to come up with, but we would love to hear from you guys.
The ones that we've been prattling on about for the last 12 weeks.
Well, yeah. But we would love to hear any questions you guys have that you didn't send in beforehand. What are some of the things that we missed? What are some of the things that are weighing heavily on you that we haven't looked at? So please send us all your questions and things like that because we want to know.
Indeed.
So,
but what's going on next week, though?
Well, we got news first.
I don't, but I need to start preparing my notes now because it's going to be a very busy week for you and I both, stupid.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. All right.
For those of you who are relatively new to the podcast or are not aware of the fact that it was some sort of a strange aligning of planets that Jay and I started working on this cast together, we share the same birthday.
Yeah.
So that gets a little weird around this time of year because we keep thinking, oh, I got our nose prepared. No, we can't. We got Christmas coming up. Oh, and that other day. That one you just kind of write off and go, oh, frack. Yeah,
that one again. Yeah, ironically, Kier's actually my younger time clone, but because of Wibbly Wobbly, he came out first. So, yeah.
That explains why my beard is going gray.
Yeah.
And you can't grow true facial hair. Acting.
Oh, but we did get a new Christmas trailer this week, and this looks pretty dark.
Was it technically a trailer or a teaser in this one because of the way the information is provided? I can never really tell the distinction when it comes to this show.
I don't know. I think they almost use the two interchangeably sometimes.
Okay.
But it's very simple. There's not a lot going on. So I guess it would almost count more as a teaser, but I don't know. It looks like some seriously messed up things are happening.
Yeah. Again, this is for a Christmas special. Because of the fact that we've gotten to the point now where the Christmas episodes have become more closely linked to either the preceding series or the series to come, mm-hmm. And we've been in a darker toned series.
Yeah.
Not surprising that even for a Christmas episode, this one, it has some genuine creep factor to it.
Yeah. Haley, have you had a chance to watch it yet?
I can't remember if I've seen this one or not. What happens in this one?
It's basically almost like a standoff, and then toys begin rolling in from outside.
I don't think I've seen this one yet.
Yeah.
You get a couple of first glimpses of some of the supporting characters as well, those in their silver vests and whatnot. So
I mean, it's basically just a way to look at everyone on screen and then, you know, Santa Claus make an entrance and, you know, apparently get his daddy voice on.
Yeah.
There's not going on under my roof. Yes, sir.
I will turn this holiday around right now.
Oh, then some exciting news. We've got guest confirmation for both Gallifrey 1 and Long Island 2. Apparently, Alex Kingston is going to be Gallifrey 1. I am excited about this.
That is I'm going to get ejected.
It's gonna
I'll
be
podcasting from the parking lot.
It's going to be a race to see which one of us goes first. Oh, and so then Katie Manning is actually going to be at Long Island too. And yes. I think that she is the first guest that they have confirmed.
Yep. So she is. And right out of the box, it's just going to let you know that we're going to, again, it's great caliber stuff. It's going to be a huge guest. If they're already announcing now, you know, and we're 10 months, 11 months yeah. away, it's going to be a huge docket by the time it's all said and done.
Oh, so. Yes. Well worth it. And I know for a Long Island Who, they still have passes on sale, I believe. Are the passes on sale?
3-day passes are still available. Yep.
And the hotel is accepting reservations.
Correct. So. The only thing I'm not sure what they've done yet, open them up. One of the things, I think I mentioned this last time around, they do something called a master plan where you purchase your 3-day passes for the weekend, but it also gets you preferred seating in the panels. So the first three rows of all the major panels are reserved for people bearing the master plan. And it also gains you access to the celebrity attended meals that happen once per day. So I'm not sure if those have been released yet.
I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see where you can actually purchase them. But they do have the pricing and everything like that on their front page.
Okay.
So
it's going to be added in.
They do have the details on their page. I don't know if you can purchase them already or not.
Okay.
But yeah.
Oh, just speaking from, I did not opt into the master plan this past year, but was spending a lot of time chatting with folks who did, and the benefits for that small monetary increase, if you're going to be going for the full weekend, I probably recommend springing the extra so that you get a chance to do a little meet and greet with a lot of the guests that are there because they're very approachable.
Oh yeah.
So if you're sitting there in one of the dining halls or the banquet halls or whatever, and you'll have an opportunity to be able to come by and just chat hello, as long as you're not taking pictures or asking for autographs or anything. If you just want to shoot the breeze for a couple minutes, it's totally worth it.
Yeah. And it looks like if you are willing to share rooms and stuff, they've got them at single occupancy all the way up to quadruple occupancy. But quadruple occupancy is $439 per person, which that includes your 3-day pass for the deal, the hotel room, Sunday brunch with the stars, one autograph from a specially selected guest list. So it's one photo session. So you get a lot for the money that you're paying. It's a really good deal.
Mm-hmm. A lot of bang for your buck.
Exactly. You might say a big bang for your buck. You see what I
so
did there?
So what else do we got in the news here?
Don't walk all over his puns.
We have to get banned in China.
I'm going to jump forward a little bit here since we're discussing sort of public gathering, public events, and that sort of thing, and say that hey, want to go to a theme park?
I don't know. Is it Doctor Who themed?
Maybe.
Yay!
Yeah, this was actually an interesting piece. I want to just clarify that this is not exclusively a Who park.
No.
So we're not going to Gallifreyland or something like that. But an existing resort is going to be doing thematic installations for some popular shows.
Yeah, I mean,
including
Top Gear, Sherlock, Doctor Who. Some of the big name BBC shows.
Right. They basically learned that Universal Studios was they're on to something over there. So for the first time in the history of ever, an idea crafted in the United States actually goes back over to the UK. That's one in the column, thank you.
Now we're soaring. This is like, things are going to change. This irritated the crap out of me reading it, though, because I was like, I've been saying for years that I need to get down to Orlando to go to the Wizarding World in Universal, and now it's like, okay, there's a second one on the list, and I haven't even gotten the first one done yet.
I went to Orlando, and we were too cheap to pay for the tickets to get into Disney World, and so you could see the castle, like, up above the Disney walls, and it was really sad.
Aww.
It's like you having your face pressed against the glass.
You're the little, like, dirty orphan sitting outside the city walls.
Yep.
Somebody give me a boost. You want to take a picture? Give me a boost.
I'm trying to break into Hogwarts, guys. I can totally do it.
Oh, but so Moffat, apparently, you know, you give him 2 weeks without anything on screen and he just cannot keep his mouth shut.
Right. So go ahead and slap on your Moffat-splaining headphones because you're about to get an earful.
Yeah. So the first thing he decided to talk about was talking about Osgood and Orson Pink. And, you know, obviously the question, is Osgood really dead and how can Orson Pink still exist? It's almost like we just talked about that.
Yeah, strange. But in the way he went about it was, you know, and this was just regarding the Osgood scenario, no matter how many times you ask the man and no matter how many, you know, doe-eyed little children you hold up that say, you know, I really thought he was a wonderful person.
Right.
I want to see her come back. It's not going to happen. Dead is dead. This time, dead is dead.
Yeah, finally. It eventually happened.
Once.
But yeah, and this is, people are always going to be like, no, it's the Zygon, and it's, you're never going to get away from that until, you know, until he brings on Zygon Osgood and kills her off too.
Right.
So, but I don't think, I mean, you know, it says in the article, it says, but remember, first rule, Moffat lies. So I think that there's always going to be that contingent that's going to be holding on to hope. Who knows?
And then his circuitous explanation, and by explanation, I'm putting very large, you know, no figure quotes around that, about
some things he explained to us.
Yes, about the Orson Pink thing, was that in this is something that you see very practiced convention panelists like Mark Shepard and those types do, where you'll ask them a question and they will give you all the supporting details that led to that question and then walk away from the microphone. So he's someone asking him, you know, how could the whole paradox of Danny Pink and Orson Pink and those things really happen? And he said, well, you know, there could be a lot of explanations because, you know, and some explanation is really going to have to be out there because there was the toy soldier and that was a family heirloom. And boy, that's tough, isn't it? Oh, look over there. They've got cookies. And he wandered off and said absolutely nothing.
Yeah. So, yeah, Moffat's explaining. But, yeah. And then he
but said, that was interview one.
Yeah. Then he explains some other things to us.
Well, he comes back in a second explanation. It wasn't really an explanation. He's in a further discussion. He wanted to talk about or people were picking his brain about the dynamic between what we would consider to be more of a classic older doctor, younger companion, non-romantic, strictly kind of a traveling the universe adventure kind of a relationship, and how it played out this past series and heading into series 9. You know, what does this mean? You know, you worked very hard to create something that finally takes all of the at times distracting romance off the table, and you get back to these basics. Does that then mean that you need to keep Clara around for a while so that you can make further progress with this? And he, you know, basically said, well, you know, that'd be very important, you know, if Clara's still there. Oh, look, cookies. But I mean, he's a little more verbose about it. But he just basically explained, yeah, it was a matter of if he wanted this to be more of a, and I don't really know why he chose this word, a real interaction. You know, if you found someone who stumbled into this situation, you know, this is not the fairy tale version or the imaginary friend version, as he says it. This is probably the version that would actually happen, where you've got a young girl in a, as he describes it, an intense friendship with an older time traveler. Mm-hmm. You know, for all those times when that actually happens, this is what really plays.
You know, just like happens to people all the time.
Yeah, I get postcards. Traveling again.
I get postcards all the time. They start a week from now. But then, you know, Moffat decided to go for the hat trick, and Moffat explained one more time, talking about the possibility of a female doctor. And this basically, I feel like he's just trolling at this point. He's just trying to stir things up because he came out and said, oh yeah, no, the doctor can totally be female. It's like, really, why now? Why again are we getting this from him?
Can, because he's a wordsmith.
Mm.
Can, could, should, will.
Yeah,
he'll toy with those all day long as people will continue to write down everything that he says because it's gratifying.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't feel like there's any need to bring this up again. I think
until they actually cast a woman as the doctor.
Yeah, and I again, you know, I'm all for a female doctor if they cast the right person. If they cast the right person for the role, I don't care about sex or, you know, gender or race or anything like that. You know, as long as it's the right person playing the doctor, then none of that stuff should matter.
But I'm going to throw one little caveat on that. And I think it was actually, and I'll credit Moffat himself as being the one who put the best spin on it. He says, there's absolutely nothing that would keep a female actor from representing the doctor, you know, if it's the right person for the role. But, and this is the thing that I think it hinges on, and it's right for where the story is at the time.
Yeah.
So if there is something where it really justifies the story, just like right now, they crafted all of the episodes of the season that worked well for the persona of this older, serious, detached, alien, somewhat disgruntled, spiky personality.
Yeah.
So if the story lends itself to that, I'm totally on board. But I don't want it being done for the sake of just being done.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, and then down here at the bottom, Michelle Gomez said basically the same thing. She said, I don't think now is the time to talk about it. I think it's in poor taste to discuss having any new doctor when we have just been delivered one of the finest performances by Peter Capaldi. And
that's true.
Yeah, I've got to say all power to her on that, because that's the truth of it. It's like there's no reason to be talking about who comes next when, you know, we've just started with Capaldi and he's such a fantastic doctor.
Yeah. Why would you want to steal that thunder right now?
Yeah, exactly. So, then let's see. One of the last bit of news we've got here is apparently Big Chief Studios is releasing Series 8 figures and other collectibles.
Yes. Well, there were the ones that we had seen previously that were the 8th scale or 12th scale, the smaller figures, and it looked absolutely nothing like Capaldi. I mean, it looked more like, I don't know, an extra from one of the Star Trek Next Gen sets. They had a couple of extra heads around in those figures. Right. And said, "Oh, just, you know, slap it on the thing with it." But Big Chief came out with a 6th scale that looks phenomenal. And not only
it's kind of
really
creepy how much it looks like him.
I was going to say it looks slightly terrifying.
This is why he's mad at Santa Claus. Santa Claus turned him into a toy.
I think one of the coolest things is all of what you get. It's not cheap. Okay, we're looking at about, you know, roughly about 170 pounds sterling. But you get the figure in his Series 8 costume, and also comes with the Jelly Baby case that he developed for Murder on the Orient Express or the Mummy on the Orient Express, the yo-yo, a version of the TARDIS in siege mode, and then this base that lights up that the whole figure stands on, and the first 500 people that spring for it will also get the TARDIS with the doctor stuck inside, the shrunken TARDIS, where you see his face and a hand sticking out of it. So you can stick the hand coming out of the doorway in thing mode as it's walking across. So if you're ready to spring for that, please do.
Yeah, so for those of us on this side of the pond, that's about $270.
Yeah. So. I love the fact when they describe it, they say that, you know, you'll get the portrait head. Okay, featuring the authentic likeness of Peter Capaldi. And then you have the slim male body with over 30 points of articulation. I don't really know what a point of articulation is particularly describing. Does that just mean that it gestures at you in over 30 angry ways? Or
a point of articulation?
It's like, you know, the elbows, the knees, the hips, the shoulders, and then 30 more in the eyebrows.
So these are all hinge points.
Yes.
Oh, it also does come with a wallet with psychic paper and a glove with a spoon.
Nice.
So he can battle.
And a sonic screwdriver closed and a sonic screwdriver open.
Yes, because they couldn't give you a little 6th scale one that actually opened and closed. That would be cool.
That would.
But he comes with a yo-yo. No way that could possibly break.
He comes with a yo-yo, guys.
Dude, a little 6th scale yo-yo that probably works.
Probably, yeah.
Actual functioning yo-yo.
But he's got that outstretched hand, you know, that pointy gesture, and you can just hang
loop
the string.
It over there.
Exactly.
I want, all right, dear Santa Claus.
Oh, and then the last little bit of news, well, it's more non-news, honestly, is apparently someone has come up with a way to play Fallout New Vegas as the Doctor. And this only works in Fallout because in Fallout 3, you have to, you actually have to get into violence and stuff. But for Fallout New Vegas, there is a way that you can go back and play the game without killing anyone and having it just, it says this is a really just a no kill, high charisma, high intelligence run. So you basically, you put all of your stats into speech, science, and lockpicking. And then you go through the game charming and conversing and thinking your way out of situations and never once firing a shot. And I, you know, I've probably played New Vegas 6 or 7 times already, and I want to go back and play it again now. I'm going to, as soon as I can find a suit and a pair of glasses to put on my character, I am golden. But if you want to see everything that they put into this, you can go click on the show notes at gallifreypublicradio.com/116 and find any of the stories that we talked about and check them all out. I mean, there's some great stuff.
Yes.
So next week, we're actually going to be taking a look at the Ghosts of Christmas specials past. We're going to take a look at some of the Christmas specials that have come before, you know, some of the great things like Christmas Carol and some of the not so good ones like some of the others.
Go ahead, say it. You know you want to say it.
The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Worst
Christmas special ever.
Get it all out.
Ever. Of all time. So we're going to take a look. We're not going to restrict ourselves solely to New Who, but that's where the most everyone knows of the Christmas specials. So we'll see how we go. So if you have a Christmas special that you feel needs to be included, then let us know. Find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can go and find our Facebook. You can give us a phone call.
Well, you can get that phone number really easily by just sallying forth to GallifreyPublicRadio.com, and all that crap just comes popping up on the screen. Even on your telephonic device. Click to call.
What, you mean use my phone as a phone? I'm not doing that.
With the latest iOS crazy. Update, yeah. I found that I can now actually make calls on this. I had to jailbreak it first.
Oh, yeah, so get a hold of us in one of those many ways and let us know which Christmas special that you feel needs to be included and which one needs to be erased from memory. Because we've all got that one. All right, well, this has been episode 116 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, but what about the thing? Why did we not get the thing?
And this is Gear saying, have a jelly baby and know me better, man.
And this is Haley saying, # banned in China.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also go to GunnaGeek.com to check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.
I think that's recording. Numbers are going up. That's a good sign.
I'm recording?
?
All right. How do I stop this stupid thing?